Welcome to the Not Old Better Show, the show covering all things health, wellness, culture, and more. The show for all of us who aren't old, we're better. Each week, we'll interview superstars, experts, and ordinary people doing extraordinary things, all related to this wonderful experience of getting better, not older. Now, here's your host, the award-winning Paul Vogelzang.
Welcome, discerning listeners, birders, bird watchers, to a new chapter of the Not Old Better Show Science Interview Series on radio and podcast. I'm Paul Vogelzang. Today, we journey through the pages of history into the heart of America's scientific awakening with our esteemed guest, science writer Ann B. Parson, author of the new book, The Birds of Dog. This historical fiction novel, a tapestry woven with threads of fact and fiction, delves into the rich and often overlooked narratives of America's earliest scientific minds and their tussle with nature's untouched wonders. Imagine a time when the clatter of the telegraph and the hiss of steam engines were as novel as smartphones today. A time when new technologies were hurtling humanity forward, yet paradoxically threatening the very splendors they sought to study. In Ann Parson's new book, The Birds of Dog, Ann Parson brings this vibrant era to life through the eyes of Catherine Pickering, a fictional curator's assistant at the Boston Society of Natural History, and her cousin Charles, a true historical figure and a pioneer of the natural sciences, including some amazing letters written in the 1830s.
I am reading from one of the many letters in the book, and the letters are coming from a curator's assistant at the Boston Society of Natural History. This is back in 1830. She's writing her cousin, who's out on an exploring expedition in the South Seas. And her letter, February 2nd, 1839, goes this way. Dear cousin, the Society's museum continues to accumulate samples at an alarming rate. As you once said yourself, it's every curator's dilemma. No one wants to turn away an interesting specimen, yet space is at a premium. Again, this is about the Boston Society of Natural History. Part of the problem were self-appointed naturalists who are eager to contribute to our holdings and whose numbers are on the rise. I had to hide my amusement yesterday when Mrs. Willoughby crossed the threshold, the decomposing albino squirrel in a bag. I would have thought that playing whist with her lady friends was her favorite pastime, but she told me that when the weather is nice, there's nothing she'd rather do than take a walk in the woods with her dog and her trusty Winchester. Just this week, we've listed 200 new specimens. My favorite is a translucent blue-tailed lizard, the only known example found in New England. It was caught with great trouble in a mud hole in Vermont. Its tail really is the color of a penetrating August sky crossed with yellow and black lines. Nature is such an accomplished artist, far better than we mortals. We also received a fossil of an extinct fish sent by the esteemed Swiss biologist Louis Agassiz. The Society elected Mr. Agassiz an honorary member last year, not without objection. He may be popular in Europe, but some of our members feel that his theory of ancient global ice sheets covering Europe is far-fetched and too thinly demonstrated. Surprises never cease here. A dealer from Philadelphia brought in what he peddled as a new discovery, a pygmy bison that looks exactly like a full-grown male, save for its height of 7 or 8 inches. It has a bison's shaggy head, its same forward hunch, and same horns, hoofs, and tail, yet Mr. Harris has discovered that it's fabricated, and the dealer has evaporated into thin air. Whoever made it was a capable craftsman and managed to cover a piece of wood with the skin of a pug dog, the head hair, belly of an embryo bear, and a buffalo's black horn for horns and hoofs. The piece is so remarkable we've left it on display with this clarification. Pygmy bison art of a hoaxer.
That, of course, is our guest today, science writer Ann Parson, reading from her new book, The Birds of Dog. In our conversation today with Ann Parson, we will explore the pivotal choices between Parson's shift from nonfiction to the world of historical fiction, allowing Ann Parson to color within and beyond the lines of history's canvas. We'll discuss the interplay of hunting, the advent of wildlife conservation, and the rise of technologies that both propelled science and imperiled its subjects. What of the characters that dance across these pages, from John James Audubon to Charles Dickens, Henry Thoreau to John Wilkes's father, Parson? All of these characters stitch historical fabric and a narrative that breathes life into the past with Anne Parson's meticulous research and vibrant storytelling. You're just going to love this interview. Prepare to be whisked away to a time of curiosity and scientific marvels where the world was ripe for discovery and every new finding was a treasure. This is The Dogs of Bird, a story of passion, progress, and the perpetual dance between humanity's reach for knowledge and the natural world's enigmatic beauty. Join us for this expedition through time where science and story meet, right here on the Not Old Better Show Science Interview Series on radio and podcast. Anne B. Parson, welcome to the program.
Oh, it's so nice to be on your program. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks for reading a passage from your wonderful new book, The Birds of Dog, a historical novel based mostly on true events. I love that title. I love the precision there. You're so well known as a science writer, having to be precise, I'm sure, always. And you've moved now into a little bit of historical fiction. What led you to this story? Because it's a wonderful one. Maybe just give us a little bit of background on the book and your finding of this fantastic subject.
Being a longtime journalist, science journalist, I've always been interested in the history of science. Quite a few years ago now, I did a book for a family, the Pickerings. And they're a very historical family here in New England because they came over in 1651. And built a house and spread out into all sorts of adventures. And within that family, there were three or four early scientists. And when I say early, this is early 1800s, which is quite unique. I started looking at them, studying them, and they all belong to the Boston Society of Natural History, which I knew eventually became Boston's Science Museum. So one of those Pickerings was Charles Pickering. And I began studying him. He was one of America's leading naturalists, born in 1805. He was really an accomplished guy. He went off on a cruise in 1838 called the U.S. Exploring Expedition, famous voyage, which lasted 4 years. So in short, he really got me interested in doing a story that ended up the correspondence between his cousin, who's a curator's assistant at the Boston Society of Natural History, writing Charles while he's out on his voyage.
Congratulations on this, The Birds of Dog. I really love that title. And you mentioned the Boston Society of Natural History. Tell us what dog represents, because it's a really interesting title. And the birds of dog actually refer to a place.
The overarching theme in the book is pro-wildlife, anti-hunting, anti-guns. And you have to get much more into the book to understand that more. But when Charles is out as the leading zoologist on this major ocean voyage, they landed on a speck of an island called Dog Island. And it's part of a whole big chain in the South Pacific called the Disappointments. That's the name of the whole chain of islands. And this island in special had never had guns or any weapons on it. And all the animals, the birds especially, were very tame. You could tip the birds off their nest for their eggs. They'd eat out of your hand. And so the island came to symbolize what the rest of my book is about, which is technology like guns versus wildlife.
I can't help but mention right here out of the gate, just as we're beginning our interview, a lovely reference that you make at the very start of the book. You talked for just a moment there about guns. And in the book, you talk a little bit about how guns have almost strayed from their original purpose. And then you make a reference to with Sandy Hook in mind. And I just was so touched by that.
When I really realized that I was going to write a book, and I think at that point I wasn't sure it was going to be fiction or nonfiction, Sandy Hook happened and propelled me even more into a story that had to do with guns and how destructive they are.
This role of destruction and the destruction technology has a place in your book, because the book takes place right almost at the very start of some of the technologies and science are really taking the next step. How did you weave together this historical accuracy with a fictional element to really bring this whole story to life?
It's true. There were a lot of inventions happening. Again, the book primarily takes place in the 1830s and 40s, and it extends out actually to the end of the century, but most of it's 1830s and 40s. That time period was just colossal in terms of new inventions. There was Daguerre's invention. There was the telegraph, Samuel Morse's invention. They were announced in Boston papers almost back to back. You had trains starting up for the first time. I actually have a passage in my book that explains that telegraph, for instance, and the pigeon, and I'm reading from the book, were on a collision course. The gun was a fatal blow, but the hunters knew where to go because wired messages informed them where pigeons were roosting and what direction they were flying in. The great food markets of Boston were becoming famous. The city's market men were celebrated for their stocks of crustaceans, etc., as well as pigeon, which was the rising favorite. Technology is so helpful to humans, yet so detrimental to wildlife.
It's just a fascinating book. Again, our guest today is Ann B. Parson, author of the new book, The Birds of Dog, an historical novel based on mostly true events. The book is wonderful. I just can't recommend it enough. You're getting a lot of wonderful reviews online, lots of great praise for your book. We'll put links so that our audience can find out more information about Ann B. Parson, her work, and in particular, her new book, The Birds of Dog. We've talked a little bit about this historical fiction, the tone of the book and the themes of the book. You bring in some of these really amazing people of that period, Audubon, Charles Dickens, Henry Thoreau. And I thought it was fascinating. Even Junius Brutus Booth plays a role. He's the father of an assassin, President Lincoln. But you did such a great job. What was your thinking and how did you get them to all fit in together with this?
There's one connection after another to this time period. And lo and behold, all those people you mentioned really were in Boston during this period of time. And it was very easy to find interesting stories that link them to my central theme, wildlife and technology. To give an example, Charles Dickens came to Boston a couple of times, and I have him go into, and I'm trying to be real to him and to the time frame, but I suspect he probably went to the Boston Society of Natural History because it was right around the corner. He was a great friend of Mary Anning, who was a paleontologist back in England, and I have him going to the Boston Society to look for fossils on her behalf. And I tell real stories about him. For instance, he got really drunk one night. He went out to a Boston family's home, and apparently he got so drunk that they wrapped a scarf around his head when they brought him back to the hotel because so the press would not recognize him. And but Audubon is in and out of Boston a lot. I talk a lot about him, tell two true stories about him.
And again, I want to thank you for reading a passage of the book. And you talk about these letters. They play a real role in the book, Catherine Pickering's letters to her cousin, Charles Pickering. And Catherine, let's just start with her. I want to talk about Charles too, but let's start with Catherine. Tell us a little bit about her and her role as a woman in science, because I think that's an important part of the story. And I think will be very powerful to our audience.
She's one of the few fictitious characters. I made her up as a vehicle, quite honestly. She is a Pickering. I make her Charles Pickering's cousin. Charles was real. She's fictitious. And plant her there at the Natural History Museum as a curator's assistant. She was a natural voice to come out of me, I think, because she was a very independent woman. And in her day, especially, did things that women weren't supposed to do. But she starts realizing that she has, once she's at the Natural History Museum, she starts realizing that she has a great interest in wildlife and comes around to realizing that it's very distressing to see so many birds being shot. At first, she's not a fan of Audubon's. This is part of the storyline because Audubon shot birds. He shot as many as 100 a day. She's forward thinking. She is actually a modern woman, and women are still trying to find their independent voice. So I think she fits into the story back then, but she is a modern woman.
It's a wonderful character. You reference Audubon's shooting these birds. You do critique this idea throughout the book known as kill and collect, a method of specimen gathering at the time. And you do critique bird hunting and guns, of course. And so I wonder if you'll just tell us a little bit about how you believe some of this historical perspective can give us a sense about environmental conservation efforts today?
Back then, especially, everybody was out collecting bits and pieces of nature, especially after Linnaeus proposed a classification system for plants and animals. And a lot of museums of the day instructed their members to go out and collect things. I'm trying to get across the point back then that there was too much collecting and the whole notion that nature never ran out of species. People began to think twice. I think my whole notion in the book is we need to be more respectful of wildlife. And I don't think anything's changed that way. I think if anything today, there are more people in the world than ever. And unfortunately, many of our species are getting lost and declining drastically. So even though the kill and collect methods of those days have changed, there's still sort of this human-centric notion that the world is for our taking, and there's still a lot to bring under control, I think.
Mm-hmm. And you write about one bird in particular, the Trochilus, I think that's how you pronounce that. And you say that that bird might even be extinct today. And so that's all part of this symbolism in the book and it's a significant element to you.
I make a game out of that. And this was purely made up. One reason I had fun with this fiction, Trochilus was a chimney sweep and did exist, and whole flocks would live in someone's chimney. And the legend was that they'd drop one of their young down when they left the chimney as a gift. And I ended up making a game out of this, a gift for a gift, a Trochilus for a Trochilus. I have Charles and Catherine exchanging stories from nature that mean a lot to them. I talk about a lot of different animal stories in this. I try and get as many stories into this book as I can.
So many of our buffalo hunted to just about extinction, the Trochilus. And so there's just all of these important animal stories that come to bear here. And I thought it was interesting, the budding romance between Catherine and the character James Cutting, because he's captivating. Tell us a little bit about James Cutting, because he is a real person or was a real person.
He was a real person. And utterly amazing person. You know, the game, who would you want to have dinner with from the past? The top of my list. So he was an inventor, and he came to Boston and he invented several things. He invented a gas lamp that actually museums ended up using to stay open later at night. He invented a sideboard with beehives in it so you could sit in your parlor. It was attached to the outside of the house and watch bees making honey. But what I'm getting at is eventually he ended up starting the world's first standalone aquarium, which everybody has forgotten this. It actually was in downtown Boston. When I came across him, his whole story is so amazing that I thought, I got to get this guy in the book. So I have him and Catherine fall for each other. And he's very much of a, he just loves animals. He loves marine creatures. And he began this aquarium in downtown Boston called Boston Aquarial Gardens. It was the beginning of the modern aquarium because he came up with an invention called Cutting's aerator that allowed more oxygen to go into the water to keep marine creatures alive in the pools that he created than vegetation could. It's just extraordinary what he did with the aquarium business. His story gets quite tragic. He runs up against P.T. Barnum, who was also in Boston a lot.
Of all people.
And really caused havoc at the Boston Aquarial Gardens. I won't tell the whole story.
We'll leave that for our readers. But the overbearing P.T. Barnum plays a role here, which is just a wonderful element in Ann B. Parsons' new book, The Birds of Dog. I loved it. And I want to talk to you for a little bit more about the science behind the times of Charles Pickering to now.
Right.
And maybe give us a, there have just been some profound changes that you've observed. You've talked to them. How do they all resonate within your book? You bring it together so well.
Well, I mean, it's such a different time back then. I think an extraordinary part of this is that science was so new back in the 1800s. It's hard to believe, but the word biology was only really first coined in like 1810 and was not in routine use until the mid-1800s. And suddenly, in quite a short span of time, we have so many branches of biology. There must be hundreds, if not thousands. Science has gotten more and more intricate, and my book wants everyone to look at how did science begin and how, what technologies has it presents us with, and what is technology doing for us today? So there's a lot to think about.
There's a lot to think about. I so enjoyed the book. I've developed, as I've gotten a little older, a real interest in science and nature. And I know our audience feels the same way. If you could tell our audience one thing to make sure to take away from The Birds of Dog, what would it be?
I think it is to try and distinguish science from, which is the gathering of knowledge, from technology, which is the application of knowledge into something we use. I think there's a take home here is, where is technology in our lives? We think it's supposed to be improving our lives. Is it improving our lives? I thought about that a lot because of this book. And I think anybody who reads the book will ask themselves, what technologies have gone to the extreme, gone too far?
Wonderful book, The Birds of Dog. Our guest, of course, has been Ann B. Parson, the author of this new book. Ann B. Parson's a science journalist with a strong interest in the history of science, and this book is fantastic. I know our audience is really going to enjoy it. Thanks so much for your time today, for being so generous with your reading. Please come back, too, as you do more work in this area, and particularly in science. I have an interest in it, and I know our audience does, and so we'd love you to talk about this interesting point of intersection that's coming with science and technology and what it means for us. But thank you, Ann B. Parson.
Just thank such you, a nice... Paul. I appreciate your good questions and reading. Thank you.
Thank you. My thanks to science writer, author, Ann B. Parson, who's written the excellent new book, The Birds of Dog. My thanks to you, our wonderful audience here on radio and podcast. My thanks, of course, always to executive producer Sam Haniger. Please be well, be safe, and let's talk about better. The Not Old Better Show, science interview series on radio and podcast. Thanks, everybody, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Not Old Better Show. To find out more about all of today's stories or to view our extensive back catalog of previous shows, simply visit notold-better.com. Join us again next time as we deep dive into some of the most fascinating real-life stories from across the world, all focused on this wonderful experience of getting better, not just older. Let's talk about better. The Not Old Better Show.
One final thing. Today's show was edited for length. To hear the full interview, please check out our website for this episode and all episodes at notold-better.com, or subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, and be sure to check out your local radio stations to find out more about the Not Old Better Show on podcast and radio. You can find us all over social media. Our Twitter feed is Not Old Better, and we're on Instagram at Not Old Better too. The Not Old Better Show is a production of NOBS Studios. I'm Paul Vogelsang, and I hope you'll join me again next time to talk about better. The Not Old Better Show. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.